And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, live on a Monday afternoon in New York City, New York, where it has been 25 games, and I've withheld my judgment. I've withheld any super in-depth analysis, but it is time to ask, what in the hell is going on with the 65-win Houston Rockets, who are now 11-14 and somewhere in the morass of the West, 14th, I believe, in the conference? And I couldn't think of anyone better to do it than resident Texan, now has gone from the Mavericks beat to the Mavs suck beat, and now to the Mavs are kind of interesting again, but so are all these other teams beat. Tim McMahon, how you doing?
Howdy, partner. How are you?
I'm surviving, man. You were at Mavs Rockets on, I believe, Saturday when Luka stole the game with a flurry, an 11-0 run, and the Ringer guys played Hallelujah live in the arena, and Houston lost another one. I haven't talked too much about them because they got off to the weird start with the suspension and the injuries, and well, CP and James haven't played much together. But now we're 25 games into the season. The Rockets are 11-14. They are 25th in defense and 7th in offense, which sounds good, but isn't that good when you consider they had the best offense literally in the history of organized basketball last year. They are 10-7 with Harden and CP in the lineup, according to ESPN stats and info, which is meh. It's meh. And they are being outscored in the minutes that Harden and CP have played together. They're not the toughest team to get a handle on because they're playing the way that they play, but they've had so many, like, tough to get a handle on in the sense that I look back at last Wednesday's game. They played Minnesota in Minnesota and were up like 15 or something in the first half and just had the vibe of like, okay, they're getting it back together. Like CP
up
and James
19,
are,
but who's counting?
Well, whatever it was, they're getting it back together. And then they came out in the second half and laid a turd on the floor and scored 29 points in the second half and got ripped apart on defense. And like, I feel like I've seen a version of that game like 7 times this year.
And here's the thing. That might have been the least embarrassing loss on their winless road trip. They go 0-3 on the road. And look, CP comes back, they blow the Spurs out. The talk in the locker room after that is, look, when we're healthy, we're good. When we're healthy, we're the team that everybody thought we were going to be. And, you know, I was kind of like, well, hey, you know, they very well could be. Then this road trip starts. Like you say, they blow a 19-point lead with a 29-point second-half dud in Minnesota. Rudy Gobert gets tossed before I've even, like, you know, gotten organized up on the press row in the nosebleeds in Salt Lake City, and they just get absolutely dominated in Utah. They get outscored 38-11 in the third quarter, and then they go to Dallas, play the best game of this road trip. They're up 8 with less than 3 minutes left, and this 19-year-old can't even grow a beard smiling kid absolutely rips their heart out. Luka goes on his 11-0 run. During that run, James Harden misses 2 threes, including an air ball. Chris Paul misses 2 free throws. And then after Luka does his thing, the last bucket of the game is a second-round rookie backdoor cutting behind Chris Paul to get a layup.
Yeah, that was bad. That was bad.
Wow. I mean, it was – I'm just watching this, and the Rockets – statistically, were by far the best clutch team in the league last season, and they completely fall apart. And Kevin Pelton will get all nerdy and say, "Oh, this is blah blah blah, largely randomness." Whatever. You can talk about largely randomness. I see a team that's mojo is completely out of whack, and this road trip was like one kick in the in the cojones. I mean, they basically got kicked from every angle you could. Blow a big lead, lay a total dud and get blown out,
and then have your heart ripped out by this kid who, by the way, you're going to have to deal with for the rest of your careers.
Yeah, Luka gave him the Ric Flair low blow. That was a Ric Flair level hit to the cojones. Just on the knees and straight uppercut. So that's why I wanted to do this podcast today, because I'm past the point. I'm not going to do the nerdy Kevin Pelton voice. That was a little bit mean. I'm not going to do that. But I'm past the point where it's like, okay, they're going to figure it out. When James, like, I think they will figure it out to the point, like, if you told me they have a 25 game stretch where they play at a 50 win pace, I would be like minorly surprised, but not super surprised, but something is wrong with the team. I like, look, no one likes Trevor Ariza more than I do. That dude is not this good. Like, I'm sorry. That guy's not this good. And Luke Bamute. Yeah. Luke Bamute hadn't even played this year, basically, and wasn't a factor in the playoffs last year. So, you know, so something is wrong with the team. I have ideas that I want to talk about, but I want you to pick one and we'll get into it. You can pick offense, defense, or chemistry, locker room. Tim, you tell me, where do you want to start? Pick one of those three areas and tell me something you think is wrong with the team.
Let's start offense. Because look, they were a 65 win team in large part because they were one of the best offensive teams in NBA history last year. And, you know, as much as I see people griping about, oh my gosh, D'Antoni's not running anything. This is what they did last year. They, you know, dictate which matchup they want to attack, whether, you know, they probably set a screen to get a switch or whatever, and let either James or CP3 go. The problem right now, and I want to be very careful jumping to a grand conclusion on a guy who's had a great career. But the problem right now is CP3 is not playing anywhere near the level where he played last season. I mean, his points per game are down almost 2 per game, despite the fact that his minutes are up. His field goal percentage is way down. His three-point percentage is way down. You know, I've had scouts tell me, yeah, looks like he's a little half-step slow.
Tim, in the Jazz game, I believe Epe Udo blocked him on a switch, and in the Mavs game, he tried to dust Jalen Brunson with like a bunch of little Chris Paul sharp dribble moves, and Jalen Brunson took the ball away. And so a lot of this boils down to like Chris just isn't as good, or isn't right, or isn't fully all the way back, or something, because he just doesn't, like, forget the stats, which are all, I mean, he's on pace for his lowest 3-point percentage in 5 years, his lowest percentage from 2 since 2011. His points per ISO, which were as good as anybody ever in the history of the league last year, I believe number one in the whole league, are completely unremarkable, just a little less than a point per possession. He just doesn't look right. And that includes, by the way, that includes even, you know, every shooter is going to go through a slump. Like that gorgeous little snake, the pick and roll left to right, the righty fading elbow jumper that is as close to like an NBA logo shot as any player has in the league. Like you're gonna have games where that doesn't go in as much. But defense, he never slumped on defense, and he hasn't looked the same to me on that end either. The real plus minus numbers that we have still say he's a top 5 or 6 point guard, and look, the bar to be a top 5 or 6 point guard ain't that high. But he doesn't, like, that backdoor cut to me was symptomatic of a so-so defensive game he played against Dallas, and he doesn't have a lot of so-so defensive games normally.
Well, and look, And here's why I want to start with Chris Paul, because if CP3 is not a superstar, it's a $160 million problem. Okay? They signed that deal this summer, and obviously they knew they were signing it the second they traded for him. But you signed that deal saying, look, we have this window open to be championship contenders. We cannot let that window close. Got to keep it cracked. If the last year is painful, the last year is painful. We will deal with the 44 point whatever million dollars worth of pain then. But this is a 2 or 3 year window where the Rockets can be championship contenders. That's counting on Chris Paul to be at the level that he was last season. And you know, he's not close to that. Now, you know, he has been banged up. He dealt with elbow tendonitis early. Obviously, he had the hamstring. Suspension got him out of sync a little bit. His minutes are way up, which Brandon Knight supposedly, if they don't end up trading him, is going to come back around Christmas. Maybe lighten that load a little bit. But I mean,
the over under on how many minutes we'd get before Brandon Knight was mentioned was unofficially by me set at 8.5. I think we hit. I think we hit the under, and the under is a bad sign. If Brandon Knight is being mentioned this much this early into a Rockets podcast as a possible solution to an organ to a team wide problem, we're in uncharted waters here.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, really, look, they got rid of Melo, and that obviously Melo was not going to be part of the solution. They were awful with him on the floor. Even when he scored, he gave it all back on the other end and then some. But even then, I always said, look, we can't sit here and focus so much on that end of the payroll. A minimum salary guy is not the Rockets' biggest problem. They've got to have their max salary guys produced, you know, at that level. And, you know, Harden is putting up numbers, but is a lot of turnovers, lackadaisical defensively. But again, to me, Chris Paul right now, I don't want to say he's it sounds harsh to say he's the biggest problem. I would say biggest concern, though, simply because if he's not right and if this decline has started, then their windows basically is closed.
I want to say something about Carmelo. The Lakers melodrama, which was always going to be a thing. As soon as LeBron got there, it was just going to be a nonstop circus. I just feel like they need to work on their plot points. Their plot points are not original enough. Like, we're 30 games into the season. We've already had, is Luke Walton in trouble? And is LeBron going to make them sign Carmelo Anthony? These are too predictable. You got to throw something unpredictable. If you're going to be a melodrama, a soap opera, you got to throw something unpredictable at me. The Rich Paul plot twist playbook. It's like M. Night Shyamalan. We all know it's coming now. You got to switch it up. Anyway, that's
then maybe they could have somebody pull a D'Angelo Russell. That was pretty unpredictable back in the day. Swaggy P is back in the league.
The Denver jokes just write themselves. I mean, it's too easy. Before we move on to Houston's horrific defense, I will say, offensively, you mentioned how they're doing what they do. They're playing the way they are, which I think broadly is true. However, I do think that they have sort of gone too far in the dribble the air out of the ball direction. They're 29th in pace this year. They were 14th last year. Now, it's a difference of only a couple possessions of a game, but as the league has gotten a little faster, they've gotten a little slower. Their ISOs are up 3 per game over last year, which when you're playing fewer possessions, it's more than the proportionally it's more than 3 per game. And I just remember that game. There was a playoff game in Minnesota. I don't remember which one it was in the series, where the first half they were awful and Harden was awful and he was just like pound, 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 miss 3, pound, pound, pound. And then they came out of the locker room committed. Clearly they had talked in the locker room about, we're going to run Mike D'Antoni's stuff. Like, everyone thinks Mike D'Antoni has no stuff. He's got stuff.
Right.
We're going to run a double dribble handoff into a flip screen, picking all these scripted plays, like just to get the bodies moving. And all of a sudden, like, even if you arrive at what is essentially a similar shot to what you would get otherwise, it's the bodies are moving. It's harder for the defense. They're more likely to make a mistake along the way where maybe you get a better shot that you didn't necessarily expect. Everybody just feels more involved. I feel like I watch.
Guys are touching it. Guys feel like they have a little bit of rhythm.
And yeah, and I feel like I watch a lot of Rockets games now, and they all look like the first half of that Minnesota game. They all look like there's just nothing going on. Can we please get, and then they'll, out of a timeout, they'll run some nice D'Antoni thing and it'll work. I'm like, I need more of that, if nothing else. And to me, look, I'm not in the locker room. I'm not going to pretend to know what Eric Gordon was talking about when he said, you know, maybe we're not using some guys right to the Athletic the other day. I know that comment caused some discussion, let's say, within the team. But when he said that, the first thing I thought of is just like, their offense is just, it's just in molasses all the time. And I realize that that's fundamentally sort of how they want to be. But I feel like they've kind of let go of the rope a little bit this year and let it go too far that way.
Yeah, I was talking to some scouts, two, 3 weeks ago, and I don't know which specific game it was. I don't recall, but they were laughing. They said Mike D'Antoni literally did not call a play the entire game. They said it's something that they had never seen before. He went an entire game without calling a play from the sideline. And, you know, D'Antoni, his thing is, look, I've got ultimate trust for James Harden and Chris Paul. I'm not going to
you know, they're out there on the floor. You know, these guys are obviously high basketball IQ guys. He's going to trust them and let them run the show. But this is, I mean, really, he's kind of sitting there watching and stomaching an offense that goes completely against a lot of what he's about. I mean, this is 7 seconds or less Mike D'Antoni. And like you said, they are the second slowest team in the league. You know, he's never been an ISO guy, but, you know, he says, I'm an efficiency guy. So ISO was ridiculously efficient for him last year. But to your point, this year, you know, it hasn't been, particularly with CP3.
People, Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, options, cryptos, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy or the experienced. It's not intimidating. It's an easy way for newcomers to invest for the first time and have confidence. It's simple. It's intuitive. It has a clear design. Data is presented in an easy-to-digest way. A rookie can do it. Maybe not as well as Luka Doncic does basketball, but still. Other brokerages charge you up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood does not charge commission fees. You can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Learn to invest as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, track your favorites. You have a personalized news feed to help you do those things. And you get a custom notification for price movements so you can never miss the right millisecond to invest. Best of all, Robinhood is giving listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, Sprint, the blue chippers to help build your portfolio. All you have to do is sign up at Low Post, the name of this podcast, all one word, lowpost.robinhood.com. That's lowpost.robinhood.com. I'm at a numbers versus eye test dilemma. Do you want to hear what it is?
Sure.
So the eye test says to me, and I've talked to a couple of their coaches about this, including Mike on this podcast. The eye test says to me that teams are not switching as much against them. Defensive teams are not switching as much against them this year. And Mike D'Antoni talked about that on the podcast. And the point being, I think last year teams like 20 games in were like, oh my God, like we can't defend this Harden Capella pick and roll with three shooters around it. Like we just can't defend it. Like we get normal defense. We're giving up a lob dunk or we're giving up a three. We give up. We're just going to switch everything and just cross our fingers and our big guy will get humiliated five times by Harden, and CP and we'll just live with that. And the Rockets liked that. That's how they're like, we know how to play against that. And by the eye test, I just think teams are fighting harder not to switch this year, that they're playing a little bit more normal pick and roll defense. And for different teams, that means different things, but not just by default switching. Like Dallas barely switched DJ onto Harden the other night. And they tried to avoid it with Gobert in Utah. The advanced metrics that we have, the second spectrum tracking data stuff, says that they're switching almost as much this year as they did last year. That says that my eye test is wrong, but I know that they internally feel, and I feel watching them, that teams are sort of daring Houston to beat them in a different and almost more traditional way. Like, we want James Ennis, you shoot an above the break three. We don't think you can shoot right. that enough. You know, PJ Tucker, yeah, you're shooting 50% from corner threes. We're still helping off you. The stats don't, I don't know what you're seeing. You see them up close more than I do, but I viscerally feel that's a thing.
Well, and I also think, kind of to your point about James Ennis, you know, okay, hey, we'll give you decent looks. And PJ Tucker, even, and look, I think Tucker, they've had to rely on way too much. You know, the Melo thing. Melo is supposed to be the backup four and play a lot of minutes. Tucker's also had to play a lot of center, especially with Nene just now coming back. And man, Tucker's legs, like you can't be a 6'6" guy who's being asked to do that much defensively and be one of the highest minutes guys in the league. And you know, not suffer for it. And I think, you know, he's a guy who's shown significant signs of fatigue. And, you know, then they're playing guys, you know, fresh out the G League or on, you know, recently converted two-way deals, Gary Clark or Daniel House, that nobody fears those guys. And this sounds crazy because he's not even playing for Phoenix. They miss Ryan Anderson. I think they really miss the threat of Ryan Anderson and the fact that he's a guy who he would spot up 28, 29, 30 feet from the hoop and you had to respect it and the space that creates, because there's not the same kind of space that there was last year. for James CP3 to work.
And the minutes thing, to me, the Capella minutes are the one to watch, because they've spent the last 5 years telling us that Capella can't handle these big minutes. He gets fatigued easily. He's playing 34 minutes a game, which is six more than last year. And again, eye test, he just doesn't look as good on switches defensively as he did last year. The numbers say he's worse, but just a little bit worse. To me, he's getting blown up a little bit more, and I just wonder if these minutes are starting to add up for him. Ennis Ariza is interesting because, you know, I was on the Ennis is going to give them 85% of what Ariza gave them deal. And, you know, I've been wrong about that. And he's a much worse rebounder. Ariza was a pretty strong rebounder, a strong gang rebounder for them. Ennis's defensive rebounding percentage is pathetic. They're getting killed on the glass. We'll talk about that in a second. And, you know, he takes five threes per 36 minutes, which for a wing these days is like, okay. Trevor took 7.5. And is a better and more willing above the break 3-point shooter. Like Ennis is closer. They're not the percentage of threes they take from the corners, is like roughly comparable. But Trevor, like Ennis is shooting, I think 26% on longer above the break threes. Ariza was in the 33% range his entire Houston career. He just has a faster release. Trevor Ariza does. He's a little more willing. Like Ennis has been a little of a disappointment, and like. You know, those little hits you take across the roster, it's not enough to explain a drop-off from 65 wins to under 500, which would be one of the biggest drop-offs, if not the biggest, in the history of the league. I was noodling around with some of those numbers. And most of those drop-offs come when, like, Michael Jordan retires. That's when you see a drop-off like this. Or LeBron leaves
LeBron
in free agency.
Cleveland.
Cleveland burns to the ground for 5 years. This is totally atypical. And those little fringe things, like Gerald Green can't make a shot. It's just, it makes no shots. He's awful defensively all the time. He can't shoot. Like those add up, but they don't add up to this. It's something.
I mean, Gordon's been really bad. He's had a few games here and there, but for the most part, it's been a rough season for Eric Gordon.
Yeah, they haven't shot well and they'll shoot better. But something deeper is happening, and I think I do wonder if I know they're concerned about the sort of tenor of the team, and I do wonder if there's a sense of, you know, if people like me who are optimistic about this team underestimated the sense of, whew, we had our shot last year, and just how that sort of seeps almost subconsciously into the bloodstream of a team, like, whew, we were right there. I don't know if we're going to be any better than that ever. Like, I don't know if you sense any sort of any of that.
I think there's a little bit of that. And then I think especially early in the season, and this is something that's hard to just kind of flip the switch on, there was a sense of, well, you know, let's get through this regular season so we can try to prove something in the playoffs. You know, and you just can't, especially in the Western Conference, can't just kind of go through the motions of a regular season and wait until, okay, it's the second round of playoffs, third round, you know, here's the West Finals, we finally can prove something. You know, you've got to earn your way there, and that's a problem.
Listeners, you know I like anything that can save me time, and a few years ago, buying tickets for friends visiting in New York for sporting events or whatever, it was just getting too complicated. I would think, did I forget to check this secondary market site or that one? And all of a sudden, an hour has gone by, and I'm still worried that I'm not getting the right deal. SeatGeek is the way to fix all of that. It pulls millions of tickets into one easy-to-search place so you can find the seats you want for a price you're willing to pay. It's designed to be super streamlined and easy to use. It has a color-coded system with green dots for good deals and red dots for less good deals. It's very easy to use. It's very easy to see where the seat is and all of that stuff. It saves you all the time in the world. You don't have to check any other site. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. It should be your go-to source for everything, not just sports, by the way, comedy shows, Broadway shows. They help me get tickets to Hamilton, concerts, the whole thing. All you got to do is download the SeatGeek app. Enter promo code LOW, that's my last name, L-O-W-E, promo code LOW, and bam, $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. That's not nothing. SeatGeek, life's an event, and we have the tickets. We're talking around the actual bigger problem with the team, which is that their defense is horrific. And their defense was top 5 to 8 for almost all of last season, is now, like I said before, 25th.
And it's gotten worse since they got Jeff Bezdelic back. You know, he came back after Thanksgiving, and
they actually had put together some pretty good defensive performances. And look, I'm not blaming him by any stretch of the imagination. What I'm trying to tell you here is it's not as simple as, okay, let's give that defensive guru a huge raise to get him back out of retirement, because clearly we need him. And he didn't come back, you know, he didn't bring Trevor Ariza back. He didn't bring Luke Mbamute back. You know, sometimes it's more about personnel than it is about schemes.
Yeah, and before we move on to defense, actually, one thing that I wanted to run by you, this is an interesting thing. It's been in the ether for a while. The Rockets were worried, like, one day our math advantage is going to shrink. Mm-hmm. One day, gradually, all of these teams are going to realize that they need to take as many threes as we do. And our math, like, we go into every game up 8-0 because we're smarter. And now that's like 8-5. Like, it's just, like, that math advantage is shrinking. And I don't know if, and I know that they've been worried about this for the last 2 or 3 years. They've been telling me, you know, someday this is going to happen. I don't know that there's another money ball market inefficiency out there waiting for them to flip to try and get that back to 8-0 again. Cause right now it's like they still take more threes than anyone, but the gap shrinks a little bit every year across the entire league. I think that's an interesting little subplot to monitor.
Yeah. They still take more threes, but it's not drastic, and everybody's taking more threes. And then they are, to this point, one of the worst 3-point shooting teams. They take a lot. They don't make a high percentage. They're making 33.7%. That, you know, that ranks 24th in the league. And you know, it's, the math is, you know, is at least counting on being an average 3-point shooting team. And they're not that right now.
Yeah. And by the way, they're not a huge outlier. Like, they'll shoot better, like I said, but they are no longer a huge outlier, at least by the most advanced numbers that we have of, oh, they're shooting way worse than expected. I just looked it up right now. So we have this thing on Second Spectrum where you can look up what a team would shoot based on where every shot comes from, how close by, defenders by, et cetera, like what we would expect an average NBA team to shoot and what they're actually shooting. So there's obviously a gap there. It's either positive if you're out shooting expectations, like the Warriors are wildly positive every year, or negative if you're like, oh, I wonder if they're just getting, you know, a little unlucky. It can be a sign. It's often a sign of bad luck. It's also a sign of just your team is bad. Like, you can generate as many theoretically good shots if you want, but you don't have actually good players to make your theoretically good shots. That's been like the Brooklyn early process 76ers are sort of the quintessential example of like, oh, the great shot chart, all their players stink. Houston, by this measure, is now shooting 1.4 percentage points worse by effective field goal percentage than we would expect. That's the seventh biggest negative gap in the league, and it's close to zero. It's not like we can't look at them 25 games in and say, well, they're just getting wildly unlucky. They're getting a little unlucky, but it's not like wildly unlucky.
It's not missing 27 straight threes in a game seven where a lot of them were good.
That's uncalled for.
I'm just to cite an example where, you know, kind of applies to what you're talking about.
Someday someone will write an oral history of the weekend when Boston and Houston on consecutive days just completely forgot how to shoot. That'd actually kind of be a fun story to do on the 1 year anniversary. Just like it's got to be two of the five worst 3-point shooting games that actually mattered in the entire history of basketball happened in consecutive game sevens on consecutive days. Anyway,
my feeling is there'd be great quotes coming from like the Warriors on that and not so good from the Rockets.
You never know. When players talk about their own failures, sometimes they're, you know, we all fail. Sometimes they're sort of surprisingly, candid and almost raw about it. Let's talk about Houston's horrific defense, because that's the problem. What's the worst part of it to you so far?
I mean, I think that they are asking so much out of P.J. Tucker that it's too much. And then kind of the same applies to Clint Capella. You know, he's obviously playing more minutes than he ever has. I do think, despite the fact that I thought Daryl Morey kind of robbed him, I think Capella had I think he enjoyed becoming extremely rich and had a little celebration tour this summer, came back a little bit heavier. Actually, I don't think that I know that. And, wasn't quite as, I don't know, springy, energetic, whatever you want to say,
especially early in the season. I think those have been factors. And then, you know, again, CP3 is a year older, and that's going to be kind of a continuing, I mean, he, you know, unless he finds a fountain of youth, that's going to be something that they have to deal with.
You can't play your way into shape in the NBA anymore. Playing your way into shape is now getting run off the floor. It's just, no, you can't do it anymore.
Luka's managed to, but he's 19.
You know, it's funny. It's funny you say that. He doesn't look skinny, but he's looked, you could just watch on tell on TV, he's lost significant weight since the season started.
He has dropped some of his sit on a yacht and play Fortnite weight for sure.
What a life.
Yeah.
What a life. I would love to live on a beach in Europe and be a basketball star. And he's doing well.
I'd take one or the other.
Yeah, he's doing well in Dallas, not on the beach, but still being a basketball star. I saw people push back on Tim Bontemps' declaration that Luka is easily the rookie of the year over DeAndre Ayton.
It's the wrong guy to even bring up.
Yeah,
Junior's second best rookie.
You can talk about that all. I love JJJ, but like, I'm sorry, DeAndre Ayton's team is 4-22. It's not his fault, but I'm sorry.
Well,
I'm
already. It's like, is he? What's going on? Is he really sick, or did he get benched? I mean, there's a lot of strangeness there.
He's been fine. He's been to expectations. Luka is doing this in games that actually matter. He's been the best player.
Luka was just the Cajones Factor Player of the Month. I mean, there's no bigger honor in basketball. The kid won it his second month in the league. That was before his 11-0 run. That didn't even count towards that. Now he's the favorite for next month.
That dude teleports. His step back three is like a teleport three. He's 8 feet inside the line, and all of a sudden he's 5 feet behind it. It's not even close. It's like
you look at, and this gets back to Rockets defense too. You look at his last three. Now he just hit one in the corner. He'd hit a step back from like 28 over Capella. He drove and bodied P.J. Tucker, which that's saying something there. Bodied P.J. Tucker, muscled him to get great separation, to get a little floater. And then they switch it again. It's him against Capella. He takes one hard dribble to his right. Capella bites so hard, both of his feet end up in the paint. And Luka steps back and knocks down a three. Both of Capella's feet were touching the paint at one point of that drive. And he gets so much distance on that step back, and he's got that P3, the place in Santa Barbara where a lot of guys work out. I actually did something on this. He has that same instant ability to decelerate and change direction as James Harden. And I think at this point, Luka's step back might be as salty as anybody in the leagues other than Harden's.
Also has a beautiful little teardrop in the lane. Anyway.
Shout out to Mike Procopio on that one.
Sweet Chuck.
Yeah.
People, if you want to get in shape, the best way to do it is to change your diet. But changing your diet is hard. Maybe you don't have time to go to the gym. You don't have time to go to the grocery store and buy a million different organic ingredients. All of that. Maybe you don't even have time to cook big, elaborate meals. Now you can do all of that without having to do a ton of work, all thanks to the easy-to-prepare meal kit delivery service, Sun Basket. It makes it easy and convenient to cook healthy, delicious meals at home, even if you are a moron in the kitchen like me, and I can speak from personal experience. There are 18 weekly recipes to pick from. You can do paleo, gluten-free, lean and clean, vegan, diabetes-friendly, more. You can mix and match depending on your personal nutritional needs, who you live with, all of that stuff. We did just last night a tarragon-infused steak and potatoes with parsnips. I would never buy a parsnip. I didn't even know what a parsnip was until like 2 years ago. And the best thing about it is that Sunbasket is actually easy. Like an idiot like me can do it just by reading the directions. It's easier. We've tried other mail order pre-prepared food services before. Sunbasket is by far the easiest. They claim you can do it in as little as 15 minutes. I can't. But I can sniff half an hour, which is very good for me. And the best part, Sunbasket is delivered with pre-proportioned ingredients, clear nutritional information. You never have to actually think about what you're doing. You're just eating healthy. Right now, go to sunbasket.com/low, my last name, L-O-W-E, sunbasket.com/low to learn more and get $35 off your first order. That's a lot. That's sunbasket.com/low for $35 off your first order today. Sunbasket.com/low. On Houston's defense, here there are two things I want to talk about. They're 29th in defensive rebounding. they were third last year, I think, or maybe fifth. Saved only by the hilariously awful at everything Wizards, who are last. If not for those Wizards, we could say Houston would is on pace for the lowest defensive rebounding rate in 5 years, which they are, but the Wizards are actually on pace to out incompetent them. You want to blame it on, well, they switch all the time on defense, so Capella is 30 feet from the rim by the end of a possession, and they don't have any other good rebounders there to clean up. Well, that's all the same from last year. Now, Ariza to Ennis is a rebounding downgrade. CP's mm-hmm. rebounding is a little bit down. Everyone else is about the same. Capella is also down significantly, despite a big fat bonus he gets with to go, I think, over 30% defensive rebounding rate. He's down from 30.1 to 24, which suggests to me that he's not getting back into the mix enough. And when he is in the mix, he's not as impactful. DJ pushed him around a little bit the other night. I don't think there's any one silver bullet. I think it's the switching scheme and the slight decline in rebounding across the roster that is, it's just no one is doing well enough, and the scheme sort of, puts them in a position where, like, you got to be on point. You got to box out. You got to hit people every single time because you don't have the luxury of there's a 7-footer here parked by the basket every time. I will say this to McMahon. If you watch that game against Dallas closely, they tweaked their switching just a little bit. Like, they've been reluctant to switch with CP a lot throughout the whole year once he got back. That was a clear adjustment. Like, we're going to try to switch less with him. Even when we rescue him with that third switch, second switch that comes from behind, mm-hmm. we're going to try and do that less. They switched less with Eric Gordon against Dallas, and they switched less with another, like Gerald Green, you know, those guys, to try and keep Capella back in the play. I bet if we watch them their next 5 or 6 games that they're going to experiment with, okay, what if we switch 80% of ball screens, let's tamp that down to 60 to try and save our defensive rebounding, because they just can't win giving up all these second chance opportunities.
Yeah, and you know, it was interesting that down the stretch when Luke went off, they did decide not to switch the one pick and roll, and then he just took Tuck where he wanted to take him and dropped him off and hit that little floater. But that whole thing got them, they got in trouble, and they were up 8. Luka had been bad all game long. They got in trouble because they do always switch with Harden, and they switch like Harden fighting through a screen is just not even a consideration.
Dude, he is back into his James Harden in a coma defense from two or 3 years ago. Last year it was like James Harden is trying all the time, mm-hmm. even if they put him schematically in a position where he doesn't have to fight through screens and he can just switch everything. He's like actually doing all that at peak effort and not like falling asleep away from the ball. He's back to like bad James Harden.
Yeah. And you know, he'll try on when he does take pride in a solid post defender, but it's other than that, there's not a whole lot there. And Luka got that wide open corner three because Wes Matthews comes and it's an off the ball screen. And, you know, Harden, I mean, it's, you know, just like, oh, okay, there's a screen. Hey, go ahead, take him, Nene. Nene is like, okay, here I am guarding this 3-point shooter. What the hell am I doing? And so Tuck cheats up to help him. Ball gets swung to West. Tuck's out of position. Boom, Luka's wide open in the corner where, you know, that's Tuck's man. But he can only, you know, it's hard to guard two guys at one time when they're standing, you know, 12 or 15 feet away from each other. So that's just a case of where – okay, hey, this is hard work. We're up 8. You know, James Harden is going to kind of coast a little bit. And, you know, next thing you know, it's an 11-0 run.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned the off-ball screen because I do think one of the things that Houston is suffering with a little bit this year is that teams saw this all of last year, saw their defense. They know what they're going to do. And they're just better. Most teams, not all teams, most teams are just better at facing a switching defense. A lot of them, now Utah got rolled in that series against Houston, but they had a game and a half where they really confused the Rockets by slipping every pick. Like, if you're going to switch, if you're going to switch, we're slipping out of this screen before you can make the switch, and we're going to confuse you, and so you're going to be frozen, not know what to do. And also, just like Utah, even the other night, they had a bunch of plays like they ran it like 8 or 9 in a row at one point that looked like the famous sort of Phil Jackson, they call it the what the f*** play, where a bunch of guys just sort of gather at the foul line in this case and then burst apart in varying directions. That's all
are you
designed
to say that on a Disney program.
It'll get beeped.
Okay, good.
And the whole point of that is you guys are going to try and switch every off-ball, on-ball screen. We're going to confuse you, like, what's a screen, what's not a screen. I just think more teams are doing stuff like that. Dallas is great at it. Utah's great at it. The Warriors are naturally great at it, where it makes it harder to switch. They're exploiting your tendencies and confusing you, and they are not just settling for the let me throw it to Taj Gibson with James Harden on him
right.
in the post.
Which is what they want. They're like, fine, go at Harden in the post. That's what they want with a guy who's your fourth or fifth option. That's the whole idea. And look, this is, I think Ariza is a more talented defender, but he's also just a much smarter defender. I mean, he's one of the savviest wing defenders in the league. I think they miss his intelligence. I think they miss Mbamute's intelligence. You know, it's not just that they're versatile and long and all those kind of things. You know, those guys are going to be in the right spot 90%+ of the time.
The league has clearly made a collective decision. Like, if we know you're switching everything and we know Capella's 30 feet from the basket, we're amping up our crashing of the glass. We're going to do it a little bit more. We're going to send an extra guy because we think we can profit from it. It's just like Houston's smart advantage has shrunk on both ends of the floor in lots of different ways. And I think the teams knowing how to attack switches with a little more sophistication. One coach told me, this is an interesting way to put it. One coach told me switching teams are very bad help defensive teams, or can be very bad help defensive teams, because, you know, I'm our best rim protector, right? I'm out on the perimeter and there's some action going on the other side that, like, theoretically I should have an eye on that because I'm going to go over toward the rim and snuff out whatever problem you create over there. But my guy is screening and moving over here and I got to be alert. Am I switching? Am I not switching? All of a sudden there's a layup. It's why Draymond Green and the Warriors are so special, because they can do both at the same time. And I just think teams have gotten smarter. Look, Houston is better than this. I would still expect them to make the, I would still expect them to make the playoffs.
Yeah. I can't sit here and tell you, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. At this point, I think home court advantage in the first round is looking more and more unlikely. And, you know, I think a very disappointing one and done playoff appearance, you know, I mean, and if that's the case, that ain't what Tillman Fertitta's paying luxury tax for.
Did I see a quote from him this weekend somewhere recently where he was like, if I'm paying luxury tax for a team that misses the playoffs, like, I got to go out and find a new GM or something like that? I think I saw some quote to that effect.
He had said something like,
I mean, he's generalizing.
He said it like kind of in a joking tone on Media Day. You know, the other interesting thing he said in a very serious tone on Media Day was that they've got to avoid being in that repeater tax, which, okay, you got CP3 and James Harden just starting max deals. You got Capella, even though I thought they got a great bargain for him. Well, those guys going to, years from now, add those up, that's $100 million. Like, okay, I think that the mid-level exception might be a on a hiatus for quite some time for the Rockets. They might be in terms of free agency, they just might be shopping at the dollar store for a while.
So they've played, now to their credit, they've played an average schedule by degree of difficulty. However, they've played 10 home games and 15 road games. So they are, as we've talked about their road trip, you talked about it, they are due some home cooking pretty soon. The will they host the playoff series is actually quite an interesting question. Is that a reasonable goal? They're 5 games out of that goal right now. Ahead of them are, well, the Spurs are tied with them. Minnesota, 500, has been great since the Jimmy trade. We'll see. New Orleans, 500, the elephant in the room of the entire NBA season is, if New Orleans is not good, the Kings are 1 over, Dallas 2 over, Portland is down to 7th, they've won 2 in a row, Memphis is down to 6th, the Lakers are quietly creeping up the standings, like Denver, half their roster's hurt, they just signed Nick Young, as you said. I don't think it's crazy to say that they could get back into hosting home court, but they have a ton of, we can't sit here on December 10th and say, well, I am still banking on them discovering what they were last year and running off a massive run. I just don't, it doesn't feel like that to me.
No, and look, I mean, James says it over and over again, you know, PJ Tucker, other guys, like, last year is gone. You know, that last year is the mojo's gone. Some of the players are gone. I mean, this is not, they're not the 65 win Rockets anymore. They're the sub 500 trying to figure it out Rockets right now. Forget when they, 65 wins is over.
And when they were trying to trade 4 first round picks, now the last two would have been heavily protected. They would have gotten off money, blah, blah. For Jimmy, I mean, that's a month and a half. That's a month and not a half, a month and change ago now. It's very easy to suggest that the Rockets will continue to mortgage the future for this team.
You know, I wonder if that wasn't a situation, though, where Daryl Morey was making an offer that he knew the Timberwolves wouldn't accept.
Maybe. But this is my point, though. Now, a month later, you know, the trade deadline is still, whatever, 8 weeks away, obviously. Those 8 weeks are going to be pivotal because I don't know that Daryl Morey is psyched to be possibly trading a lottery pick. You can protect it. He would protect it and all that. But, like, they got $100 million, $100 million committed to 3 guys through 2022. And you know who the most recent Houston Rockets first round draft pick is on this team?
Oh boy, you can't tell me.
Clint Capella. They've traded like 5 picks in a row.
Well, at least Capella was a good one.
Yeah, it's a good pick. No, they draft well.
They draft often.
They traded one for CP, for Lou Williams, to get off Jeremy Lin, for Ty Lawson, another trade I'm forgetting. It's like, and all decisions correctly made, correctly valuing picks in the 20s, but like all of a sudden, it's like, oh my God.
And look, what they're doing now, you know, my understanding is they're basically dangling a pick in Brandon Knight. And Brandon Knight, you know, that's not a positive asset. That's a guy who's owed almost $16 million next season. So they're trying to get wing help. But, you know, they're also, as much as they go, oh, Brandon Knight might be back by Christmas, they hope he's back for somebody else.
I believe they still have the tax mid-level sitting there, right? Don't they? Or do they not?
Yeah, but again,
you're right.
They dip very lightly into it to do the 3-year thing with Gary Clark. But I mean, the tax matters. The tax does matter. Thelma Fertitta. I mean, he is the sole owner of the Rockets, and he paid $2.2 billion. Now, you know, the man is filthy rich, but not necessarily by NBA owner standards. My understanding is his net worth is about $3 billion. He paid $2.2 for the Rockets. And so you start, and that's why, man, I feel like teams, I'll just be honest. I think the Mavericks messed up by not putting a big offer on the table for Clint Capella. I would be very curious to see what the Rockets would have done if there was a, you know, 4-year, $95, $100 million deal on the table for Clint Capella, because that would have sent their tax bill soaring.
I think there's a better chance than people realize. I'm not going to put a percentage on it, but better than people think that they would have let him walk.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, look, DeAndre, his, you know, he's putting up numbers, and, you know, he's mad at me because I said that he was rubbing people the wrong way by being selfish and a little lazier in the season. But for the most part, he has played well and played hard since then. It's funny, you mentioned the Rockets' defensive rebounding issues. He just had a 20-rebound game against them, 9 on the offensive end, and had somebody with the Mavericks before the game say, "Hey, where do you think DeAndre ranks in offensive rebounding percentage among centers?" I was like, I don't know, you know, top third, and it was closer to the bottom third. And I was like, yeah, you know, he's working hard on the defensive end. Those are, you know, those come a lot easier. And then they said, but he always plays hard against Houston. This will be interesting. And then sure enough, he went up and just dominated the offensive glass. And it is, he does play hard against Houston, but it is a major, major problem for the Rockets.
He now leads the league in defensive rebounding rate. And no one, Tim McMahon, no one is more aggressive boxing out his own teammates than DeAndre Jordan for defensive rebounds. He damn near almost gave Luka Doncic a concussion earlier in the season, trying to knock his ass out of the way for a defensive rebound.
Redick's had a few things to say about that over the years, hadn't he?
I love when the basketball gods punish that by having the ball go out of bounds and then the other team inbounds and hits a three. That's what should happen. You know what else I like? I like when the basketball gods punish a guy who intentionally holds the ball past the buzzer, then takes a half-court shot and makes it. That's the basketball god saying, grow a pair and shoot that. I think the league should change the rule where any heave past half court doesn't count to your field goal percentage. I know teams have pitched that as a rule change. That's not just like pie in the sky blogger guys talking.
Really?
Teams have actually pitched
it's
that.
It's like a completely separate category.
Just erase it. Like, just erase it. It doesn't count as, it counts as a, it's like a, it's like a shooting foul almost. Like if you make it, it counts, and if you miss it, we erase it from the record as if it never happened.
Just to tempt guys. Okay, hey, actually, let's try to score points when you can, no matter what the odds are.
That moment, someone had a pretty nice three-quarter court heave in one of the games last night that hit front rim, and like that moment when it's in the air, and you can tell, ooh, it's got a chance. That's an exciting moment. Let me feel that moment more than once every four games. Where are we going to see you next? What's going on? They had a great story. Tim had a great story last week with Mike Wright about the art of James Harden drawing fouls. Did anyone give you shit about when the day that story came out, he got called for hooking Andrew Wiggins that same night?
No, I was not in Minnesota with him. I joined him for the rest of the road trip, but
Immediately, it was like the first quarter, and I was like,
it did come out in San Antonio, so there was at least a few days in between, but no, I did not get any negative feedback on that. I do love that, my favorite quote in that story was Marcus Smart saying, he flops on offense just like I flop on defense.
See, he owns it. He owns it. No, when I saw Harden get called for a hook that early in the game, I was like, the league 100% read this story and 100% called all three officials at this game. I was like, hey, call a Harden hook in like the first quarter of the game.
I think the Rockets have much bigger concerns right now than anything that I'm writing. I'll put it to you like that.
What do you got going? Where are we going to see you next?
I've got the little Texas two-step this week. Dallas-Houston over the next four nights. I think there's a decent chance we could get a Dirk sighting as soon as Wednesday. Wednesday with the Hawks in town. The Hallaluca against Trae Young thing, but Dirk might make that whole matchup take a little back seat. And then, you know, big week for the Rockets trying to get right, and you know, it's not gonna be easy with Portland and the mighty Lakers coming through town.
Boy, if you wanna get well or play your first game of the season, the Hawks are the Suns. You got to time it right. You just get on the floor, launch some shots.
Right. Well, it's a back-to-back, but I don't think Dirk's going to play both ends. I'm very confident in that.
How's my boy Maxi Kleba? When's he coming back?
He might play tonight. He's questionable with that toe. And look, you know, it's honestly kind of a fascinating deal. Like, look, Dirk will play, obviously. I mean, they're not going to have the two-decade face of the franchise getting DNP CDs. But he's going to be taking minutes from a really productive player. The Mavericks bench, as great as Luka's been, the Mavericks bench has been, I don't know, the best part of the team, but maybe the best bench in the league. And both Maxi Kleber and Dwight Powell, who's like maybe probably Dirk's best friend on the team, Dwight, and then Max, who's his fellow Wurzburg, Germany native, have been great. And they can both play with Dirk. You know, they can both guard fours on one end and then be that rim roller on the other end. But I think Dirk's going to come back and take his fellow Wurzburg native Maxi's minutes, and that'll be interesting.
Yeah, the Barea, Harris, Finney-Smith, Powell, Kleba lineup is plus 17 per 100 possessions, has scored 134 points per 100 possessions, which is like laughably good. And
you know what was crazy? Their bench was ridiculously good last year when they were a tanking team winning 24 games.
I know.
That was when Dirk was playing, you know, Dirk would, with a rotation, he'd play with that bench unit. I mean, him and Powell and Harris and Bray, and then, you know, a lot of times it was Yogi Ferrell. That was a great lineup last year.
Yeah. As I've said many times, I'm beginning to think that you could give Rick Carlisle, JJ Barea, me, you, one big man that can shoot, one big man that can roll, and we'd be like plus 20 per 100 possessions.
Well, just... he's got to have his boy Devin out there because they're good for at least one backdoor cut per game. And
I know you
might be quick enough to pull the eye. I'm not quite quick or alert enough to pull off that backdoor cut, catch the bounce pass, get the layup thing that Devin's good for, like I said, at least one a game. You know, JD's not going to have the numbers, but in terms of impact, I mean, I could make a sixth man of the year case for him.
You could make a ballot case.
There's too many good candidates. There's too many great candidates.
All right. Well, we'll look for your work. Everyone look for Tim McMahon's work. Are you going on the Hoop Collective, Windy and the Hoop Collective this week?
I am a regular on the – I am the Dennis Rodman to Wendy's Michael Jordan and Jackie Max, Scottie Pippen on the latter, you know, late in the week Hoop Collective every week.
So look for that, my boy Wendy, and look for Tim's stuff everywhere. Tim, thanks for coming on and talking some Rockets with us, my friend. I'll see you down the line hopefully soon.
Always a pleasure.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.